Welcome back. Time for another Patriots podcast here on 98.5thesportshub.com. I am Matt Dolliff. As always, I'm here with the great Alex Barth, and I want to call him Barstradamus after that Patriots win over the Ravens. 23-17 Sunday Night Football. Big win. We talked about how it was a winnable game for them, and thankfully they pulled that one out. Season back on. And they did what I've been saying they need to do for about a month now, is they need to win a game that they're supposed to lose. And, you know, they still have work to do. They still kind of need help from the rest of the AFC. But, Alex, you were big on the rain being a big factor. And you tweeted that out, and it felt like a hot take because everyone was like, oh, what are you talking about? You're a piece of crap for saying it. You said that the rain was going to be a big factor because Lamar Jackson isn't great in the rain, and lo and behold – he has an okay game, but, you know, the center, Matt Skura, is the one that really had trouble in the
race. Yes.
And I was saying in that fourth quarter, right before that last meaningful drive for the Ravens, like, watch out. You know, the center's had trouble. This might come down to ball security at the very end here. And the skies really open up there. Bill Belichick has Ernie turn up the weather machine there. And, yeah, the bad snap by Matt Skura is basically what screwed the Ravens at the end of that game. And they ended up not having enough time to make plays at the end of that game. So I'll let you go now. I'll let you take your victory lap.
Yeah. So, I mean, and you know, I'm going to actually put revisionist history on my own take.
Oh, wow.
That was correct. When I say Lamar Jackson struggles in the rain, that really means the Ravens offense under Lamar Jackson. Like, historically, Lamar's numbers are lower, but the unit as a whole has struggled. So
I like what you're saying. It makes you more correct because it was the center that had trouble there.
Right. Well, Lamar had his trouble too, I think. And this was an interesting point brought up yesterday. I'm trying to remember who the Ravens are playing this week, but they asked one of the safeties on the team the Ravens are playing this week, what you saw on the tape. And he kind of alluded to the fact that it looks like, and this isn't just against the Patriots as a whole, Lamar Jackson's trying to prove he can win by throwing the ball, and he's passing up some running lanes.
Well, there you go. They're playing the Tennessee Titans this week.
Tennessee, right.
He needs to prove he can beat that team in particular.
Right. So,
throwing the ball.
On one hand, I totally commend him for wanting to be a more well-rounded player. I there's nothing wrong with that. There's never anything wrong with that. On the other hand, you can't abandon what just made you the youngest MVP in league history. If they're going to give you the open rushing lane, you need to take it. But yeah, no, the weather was a huge factor. And I think the other thing we talked about last week, remember on Thursday, was like the media access to practice was as short as I've ever seen it. We normally get 4 to 5 minutes. We had maybe one. And my speculation was that there was a lot of install going on and that, you know, they were going to have a long practice. They were putting a lot of new things in the playbook. And we saw that specifically on the defensive side of the football. I think playing Chase Winovich at middle linebacker, a position he hadn't played since high school, that's a brilliant move there by the Patriots defensive coaching staff. I think they basically just kind of rotated everybody back one spot. They had Carl Davis come in as a true nose tackle, which they hadn't had. They moved the defensive tackles to end. They moved the defensive ends to outside linebacker. They moved the outside linebackers to middle linebacker. So I think just bumping everybody down a peg and daring the Ravens to throw it, I mean, that was – we haven't really seen them do that to a team this year. They've done the opposite. They've moved safeties up to linebacker, dare teams to run the ball. They kind of flipped that, and it worked, well. So we'll see if we see that again. You know, you kind of get the opposite this week. You're going up against the 32nd-ranked rushing team in the league in terms of overall yards and yards per carry in the Houston Texans. So they don't need to load up against the run this week. But you'd like to see a little bit more of a balanced defensive package, more Chase Winovich, more Terrence Hall, more Anthony Jennings, more Josh Uche. You'd like to see more of those guys, not necessarily all at once, but see them have a presence in this game.
I agree. Yeah, I think the defense is going to look different. I think that was like a game plan specific thing for that particular offense. But, I mean, to that point, I want to ask you, do you think they solved the problems that they had against San Francisco? Because that's what it seemed like. It seemed to me that John Harbaugh watched the film of that San Francisco game and said, we can run the crap out of the ball up and down the field on these guys, just using those stretch runs, outside zones, all that kind of stuff. But it felt like they really like tacked that down based on maybe using the young players more, using players in different ways. And I mean, I don't know. I'm more confident that they can stop an offense like we saw against the 49ers or the Ravens after that game. So I don't know. Maybe it's like too strong to say they solved all the problems, but do you think they sort of saw what they did wrong and they've corrected a lot of that? And now we might see a better defense moving forward against those kinds of offenses.
Yeah, kind of. So what stood out to me was something similar. I think the biggest problem they had against San Francisco is they couldn't deal with the jet motion plays, right? Whether it's the pop pass, the outside handoff, whatever. So Baltimore does it a little differently. They'll send the guy in motion, and then basically there's an option. Lamar can either hand it off to him directly. He can fake the handoff and then throw it out to him in the flat, depending on how the defense reacts, or he can run it. It's a double read option. I don't know what you technically call it. And those are the plays I was afraid the Patriots are going to get burned on, where he fakes the handoff to the receiver coming in motion. Patriots defense collapses on that. He throws it back to that receiver outside the numbers, and the guy has the whole sideline to run. That's what killed them last year against Baltimore, too. They didn't bite on those. They really didn't have a ton of trouble against the motion. Everybody seemed to recognize what was going on and react to it properly. So were the young guys a part of that? Sure. But to me, I don't know directly how to qualify it. It was just a mental improvement, whether they watched more film, whether they watched film differently, whether having seen the 49ers and knowing how that game went sort of informed them for how to play the Ravens. But they handed those jet motion plays just monumentally better mentally. And that made a huge difference.
Yeah, I think that does go back to coaching. That sort of was my big takeaway from the game, was that they were more prepared.
Yes.
They had a much better discipline. They did the little things better. They protected the football. They did all those things way better than the Ravens did. And so I think it was a clinic with Bill Belichick against John Harbaugh. And it was refreshing to see, because Harbaugh usually goes toe-to-toe with Belichick in the coaching and preparation department. So – I mean, Harbaugh's comments after the game about the rain were hilarious. So the guy's like, I mean, I don't know if you guys were there. It's like, all right, John, you don't have to be so smug about it. I get it. You're a professional head coach. You make a lot more money than us. We're just a bunch of clowns with microphones and keyboards. But, you know, we were there. We saw the rain. We know what was going on. Why weren't you ready for it? Why wasn't Matt Scorer ready to snap that wet football? It was wet out there. What do you want me to do? It's like you could have prepared your team better. You know, I think your team lost. You have the more talented team, I think, still. Even though we saw like the young talent on the defense for the Patriots, I think the Ravens had the more talented team. But I think that game came down to coaching and discipline.
Well, I'll add too, so many players, you know, we hear guys come to New England, right? Torrential rain. Like there's a day last week, there's like torrential rain. They're practicing outside. And a lot of guys, they first come to New England and they're like, are we practicing in the rain? Never done that before, right? Other teams, we just think of that New England. Like that's what you do. You go outside, you practice, whatever it is, unless it's something like a lightning storm, or if it's a blizzard and you're preparing for Miami, then maybe you go inside. Otherwise you practice outside. Yeah. Other teams don't do that. If it's raining, they go inside. They treat it like baseball. So, you know, it's a big picture preparation thing. And I think you mentioned the coaching too. I do want to add on Josh McDaniels. And I've been a pretty big McDaniels critic in the past. I thought for three quarters on Sunday night, he called the best game of the season. The fourth quarter was kind of a regression. They ultimately ended up winning. Right. So it's not going to get too much focus. But, you know, the trick play is obviously the highlight. I just thought the tempo to the offense was a lot better. I thought the way he was matching runs and passes, they seemed to complement each other well. There seemed to be reason behind not just the individual play calls, but the sequencing. Sometimes with Josh McDaniels, I feel like the sequencing doesn't make sense. Individually, the plays might be fine, but when you call plays, you try to string them together to get the defense looking a certain way, get them keying in on certain tendencies so later on you can go away from that tendency. Josh McDaniels, my biggest issue with him is I don't always think he sequences plays well. When he does, you go back to the Kansas City AFC Championship game in 2018, right? You go back to last drive of the Super Bowl that year. When Josh McDaniels gets in a groove sequencing plays, that's why he is considered one of the elite offensive coordinators in the league.
Yeah, he scripts drives as well as anyone, ever I've seen, you know.
But he doesn't do it. I don't think he does it as consistently as he could or as he should.
Yeah.
But The first three quarters Monday night, Sunday night, that was, you know, peak McDaniels. That is why he is considered the heir apparent and the next guy to Belichick, because he can put together sequences like that. I thought he had, again, for three quarters, a very, very good game Monday night.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to jump on McDaniels too. I always jump on him when it's like third and one or fourth and one, and he does like a backwards pitch. I just don't get the logic. Like, it's almost like
shotgun runs.
He's just trying to do like something. He's just trying to do the least expected thing. It's like, yeah, oh, we only need 1 yard. I'm going to throw the ball backwards 5 yards, and then we'll get it. I just don't. Maybe I'm an idiot, but I just don't. I never get the logic of those plays. But no, he had a good game. I thought the offense sputtered in the fourth quarter, which was a concern. I mean, they held on, thankfully, and thankfully the Ravens, beat themselves basically in that fourth quarter, or else they could have very easily come back, you know.
How many combined downs were there in the fourth quarter? I meant to look at that after the game. I just realized I never did. There might have been three, I think, in the fourth quarter. I think the Ravens had two. Maybe the Patriots got one. Like, there was just no ball move. It was all a battlefield position. Shout out Jake Bailey. But, defense really held their own.
Yeah, Bailey had a great game. Bill Belichick gave him a shout out. And, on the offense, I liked what I saw out of the offense overall because it felt like – this happened on both sides of the ball, really. I felt the offense has finally figured out, like, what they do really well, and now we're going to put a game plan together based on what we do well. And this is what we usually see out of the Patriots when everyone's fully engaged, including the quarterback. But, I think, like, they figured out what we do well. What we do best is we're going to line up in 21 personnel. We're going to beat you up with the power running game in our offensive line. We have a good fullback. We have a good power running back in Damian Harris. But we are going to try to have the threat of a pass, which is what they've done. They threw it to Jacoby Myers out of that group. And my concern is, and I asked Bill Belichick about this because I was curious, because they only used three receivers. They used Myers on every snap, and then they basically platooned N'Keal Harry and Demir Byrd. So they used like a three receiver rotation basically in 21 personnel in particular anyway. But yeah, those are the three receivers they used. My concern is, N'Keal Harry didn't really run a lot of routes, so to speak. He was blocking most of the time. And Bill's answer to me was basically, yeah, we try to, you know, figure out what our guys do well, and we put them in situations to succeed. That was the gist of what he said. And it's like, okay, N'Keal Harry's a good blocker. He did have good blocks on two of the touchdowns. Yeah. He had the great block on the Rex Burkhead touchdown, which was legal. You know, people were wondering if it was a pick play, but he was behind the line of scrimmage. And he pancaked a guy on the Cam Newton running touchdown. So, I mean, that's good. But I just think that, like, I know I hate to have, like, a negative take over a good game, but, like, I don't want to be an a-hole about it. But they need more on N'Keal Harry. They need him to be a factor in the passing game. And my concern is they weren't even trying to use him that much as a pass catcher. They didn't even run him out for routes that much. They're just like, well, he's a good blocker, so we'll use him as that, and he'll be a decoy, and we'll motion him like he's going to get the jet sweep, but he's not going to get it. He needs to get up to speed as far as making plays in the passing game. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I kind of wondered if maybe it was just, you know, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt in that game and just say, pretty much for the entire year, outside of offensive linemen, when guys have come back from IR, because this is new this year where guys can come back constantly. When guys have come back from IR, they've been very careful with them that first game back. Remember, Kyle Duggar came back he was on IR, but he missed two games, came back against the Jets, and only played like four snaps.
Yeah, and Uche too.
So, and then he played a ton against Baltimore, and Uche obviously had a bigger role. So, you know, I'll write off that one game as he's coming off a concussion. He didn't practice a ton the week leading up to it. Maybe they just wanted to be careful. Now, if he doesn't
But using him as a blocker every play, is that being careful?
Well, not necessarily being careful in the sense, like, health-wise, but just kind of, you know, guy hasn't taken contact in 3 weeks. You want him getting hit and putting the ball on the ground.
Right, limiting the workload and stuff like that. Exactly. Bill did say that, too. We want to manage the group as well.
So it's not to necessarily say you're wrong. I'm kind of willing to use that as an explanation for one game. If it's the same against Houston, you know, I think what you said holds a lot more weight. The other interesting thing to me is, in terms of N'Keal Harry, at a certain point here with Jacoby Myers, like, he's proving now that he can get himself open regularly against one-on-one coverage, which is, you know, the base level for a regular use NFL wide receiver. There's nothing wrong with a guy who can do that. It's good. At a certain point, whether it be this week, whether it be next week, whether it be in December, teams are going to start having to legitimately respect Jacoby Myers and not just put their second corner on him. When that happens, once he draws more attention, once he gets – he's going to start getting double covered a little bit. That's going to happen. He's their top receiver. Yeah. Once that happens, his numbers are naturally going to drop. Not any fault of his own. You want your number one receiver to draw the attention away. That's how you draw it up. Once that happens, somebody has to emerge on the other side to capitalize on what will be lighter coverage, whether that be – it could be Jahmyr Bird. It could be Isaiah Ford. It really should be N'Keal Harry.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Right. To go to the crux of what you're saying, I think we're agreeing. I'm just approaching it from a different angle here.
Yeah.
Once the coverage tightens up on Jacoby Myers, as Jacoby Myers' numbers start to decrease, I think 5 catches, 50 yards is a good baseline for him, what he did against Baltimore. He's not going to go, 12 for 122 like he did against the Jets. That's not going to be an every week thing. 5 for 50, somewhere in that range, 10 yards a catch is a good spot for him to be. But once that's his baseline number, once defenses are giving him that, somebody has to emerge on the other side. It should be N'Keal Harry. I wouldn't rule out Jordan Thomas, this tight end they signed. I think that they really like him, but we'll see. Should be N'Keal Harry.
I'm not holding my breath on anyone at tight end at this point.
I mean, from what I've seen out of Houston, he was a guy that basically everybody in the Houston media couldn't figure out why he didn't play. And he was one of those, he was a standout in camp. He proved he was athletic. He's kind of in some ways, and this name's going to trigger a lot of Patriots fans, but here we go.
Oh boy.
He's kind of in some ways their Jacob Hollister. But if you go and you look at what Jacob Hollister is doing in Seattle now, he's a contributor. Yeah. He just needed a change of scenery. So I'm not saying Jordan Thomas is going to come in and be a top 10 tight end, but based on what I've seen, based on what I've heard out of Houston, based on kind of the fit and the history too. They went against him in joint practices. Those guys do tend to succeed more than the average free agent in New England. Based on the history of how they've managed guys like this and everything I've heard about him, I am expecting him to contribute offensively. Yes, he's not going to, be Gronk. He's not going to catch a touchdown a game. I think he will be an upgrade for Ryan Izzo. That shouldn't be – it's a low bar.
I think it's not hard. Yeah, I mean, if he can prove he can be available like Ryan is, Ryan Izzo has at least been able to get out there.
Stayed on the field.
So, I mean, that's what Bill, one of the things Bill has been saying is that availability is more important than ability, which is true, I guess, in some ways. I mean, that's a little kind of a hot take when Bill says that, but I mean, you do need to be dependable. You need the games played as an underrated stat, which I know Maz likes to say a lot, but yeah, I mean, they're going to need more production out of someone, like you said.
Right.
I mean,
Jacoby Myers, N'Keal Harry is the guy you should look to there.
Yeah, Jacoby Myers has proven that he can get open just with savvy. Like, he's proving right there that speed is overrated. I always say speed is overrated. We talk a lot about separation. There's more than one way to get separation. You know, Jahmyr Bird is really fast, but how great of a receiver is he, really, you know? And, like, yeah, they'll be at their best when Jacoby Myers is more of, like, a complimentary type of receiver and not the number one guy getting 12 targets. Right. And N'Keal Harry can, emerge as that number one guy. I don't know if we'll see it this year, but I think that's what we're going to have to hope for. So
Was it last week we talked about that, where I compared him to, like, Chris Hogan, that guy that if you get him against the third corner, he's going to be a sturdy regular contributor?
Yeah, I don't know if it was last week, but we've been talking about it. It's been a consistent topic for us as the season's gone on. So, I agree. That's what we got to hope for, I think. So, looking ahead now, Patriots have a game against the Texans that this is a game they should win. So, I mean, if they lose this game, it'll be a disaster. It'll completely undo everything they just accomplished against the Ravens. But I do think they'll go out to Houston and win. I don't think it's going to be like last year with Brady throwing his helmet on the sideline after one mistake. I think Cam Newton's going to keep doing what he's been doing as far as protecting the ball, keeping things as simple as possible, and, just hitting the open guy. I think Jacoby Myers is going to find ways to get open against that defense. And but the question is, they weren't able to prevent the big plays last year. The defense wasn't. So, I mean, do you think that changes this year? It's a little different without DeAndre Hopkins out there. So,
and I think that's where you got to start. Do they have Stephon Gilmore? That's the question. Who's on Will Fuller? Is it going to be Stephon Gilmore? Is it going to be J.C. Jackson? Because after Will Fuller, you know, Brandon Cooks is what he is. He's a good player, but I don't think that it's beyond their capacity to handle him. Kenny Stills probably isn't going to play because he has a bad back. And besides that, they don't have too much going on. So, you know, I think – and they're the 32nd ranked run offense in the league. So as long as you can limit Deshaun Watson, like you said, take away the big play. Don't let Will Fuller get over the top. I do think they'll be okay. The one thing that does – you know, I don't want to say it worries me. I look at this. Houston's in a very similar position to the one the Patriots were in last week. They need this win to avoid things completely going off the rails. And you figure if they lose, it's going to be because of what happens on the ground. They're the 32nd ranked run defense, the last ranked run defense in the league. They're the worst ground team, both sides of the ball in the league. They can't stop the run. That was the Patriots going into the Baltimore game, and they stopped Baltimore. So to say that it would be unheard of for Houston to win this game, I think there's a lot of similarities, again, between where they are coming into this game and where the Patriots were going into the Baltimore game.
Houston is 2-7, though. So, I mean, it's a little different from
3-5.
So, I don't know. I'm not saying they're tanking or anything, but, I mean, I think they're pretty close to cooked. And, I mean, I know
if they have any pride,
they'll go out there and try to win. But, I mean,
right. No, I'm not picking Houston, but I'm just saying that, you know, to call it, I've seen people saying there's no way they're going to lose to the 2-7 Texans. Did you not see what just happened on Sunday?
Exactly.
And
they almost lost to the Jets. So, I mean,
right. And it's, they almost lost to the Jets. They then beat the Ravens kind of handily. I don't think that score was totally indicative of how the game went. And it's still the NFL. The team with the better quarterback has an inherent advantage. The Patriots do not have the better quarterback in this game. So, you know, the Patriots should win. Yes. If they do lose, it will be because they screwed up. But to talk about it, like, you know, to talk about it, like it's the 07 Patriots against the Dolphins. Pump the brakes on that one.
Right, exactly. I mean, like you said, Deshaun Watson is the better quarterback in this game,
right.
And you got to worry about him making big plays with Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks. I don't know if Brandon Cooks is healthy, but those big play receivers and Cooks is take them away and what?
Yeah. I said, is he ever?
Okay, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, you never know with him.
I know. You never know. I mean, he could have had a touchdown in that Super Bowl against the Patriots. He almost did. But, yeah, as long as they take away those big plays on defense,
yes,
they'll be fine. But one last thing before we get out of here is sure. I know you're excited to talk about the big matchup. One thing the Patriots pretty much always do when they play the Texans is completely wipe J.J. Watt out of the game. This year might be a little different. He might be going up against rookie Michael Owenu, who's had an outstanding season, especially for a rookie sixth-round pick. But
yes,
he's not really a tackle. He was still more of a guard. He's playing very well. I give him credit. But he did give up a sack to Matt Judon against the Ravens, let him blow right around him on the edge. Are they going to put Owenu on J.J. Watt? I feel like they're going to still double-team Watt. But, I mean, what do you think is going to happen with that particular matchup?
So, yeah, I think he'll have, whether it's tight end help or running back help, I mean, maybe even you line N'Keal Harry up kind of in the slot and have him crash in a couple times. He's not going to be on an island against Watt, Onwenu won't. But Jermaine Illuminor was healthy last week, and Onwenu was still the starting right tackle, played 100% of the snaps. So that tells me that he is the right tackle now going forward. And if he's the right tackle, you know, J.J. Watt is one of the rare elite pass rushers that lines up on the strong side. He doesn't come from the blind side. So that's going to be the matchup. And let's say that – well, let's start here. Let's say J.J. Watt looks like J.J. Watt. Michael Onwenu, a sixth-round guard, struggles at right tackle against one of the best pass rushers of a generation, which is completely realistic thing to happen. You know, I think you go back and you look at it and you say, all right, you know, he's going to kick inside next year when Tooney leaves and they got to go find a right tackle. And, you know, he's still good, but maybe the talk about him being the top rookie offensive lineman's a little overblown, whatever. If Michael Onwenu shuts down J.J. Watt, and it'll be with help, of course, but he's the lineman there. He's the anchor. He's going to be the center of that strategy. If Michael Onwenu shuts down J.J. Watt,
offensive rookie of the year.
Party. It's going to
out Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. Here comes Michael Onwenu.
Herbert's been good, but he hasn't won games. The fact that we can't put linemen in conversation for these awards is so wrong. If Michael Onwenu, again, a sixth-round rookie playing out of position, shuts down arguably the best pass rusher of a generation, yes, he should be in the Rookie of the Year conversation. There's an argument to be made. He's been the best rookie in football. It doesn't have to be a quarterback. It doesn't have to be a running back. It doesn't have to be a wide receiver. So
it's just, it goes based on how you value positions, I guess. Yeah, so, I mean, quarterback is way more important. So, I mean, Justin Herbert playing kind of good is more important than Michael Owenu being a stud, I suppose. But, I mean,
it's pretty important.
He'll get recognition. He'll get votes and all that stuff.
Does the NFL – I should know this.
He'll be on the all-rookie team anyway. He's going to get my vote.
Did they do that? I couldn't remember if they did that or not.
I think the Pro Football Writer's doing all-rookie team.
Do they? They should.
I remember because I put Chase Winovich on mine last year. So, I mean, Owenu's going to be on my all-rookie team no matter what. I mean,
right.
Obviously, there's a bias there, but that's just how it works.
You know, you've seen him ranked below Tristan Wirfs, who's been – okay. You've seen him ranked below Mekhi Becton, who hasn't been able to stay on the field. Like,
those
I think
are the high picks that get hype, you know?
Right. I think there's a legitimate case to be made, all joking aside, that he has been the best rookie offensive lineman in football. And if he does show up against J.J. Watt, I do think that puts him in the national conversation. So that's what I'm going to be watching for a lot of the game is those two. I think that's going to be fascinating. Now, because I've said all this, Houston will decide for the first time in forever to move J.J. Watt to the other side. And we won't get that matchup.
Right.
But if it does happen, I just take a couple plays and watch specifically what happens at right tackle when the Patriots are on offense, because that could be a ton of fun.
All right. You want to get Barth excited. You get him talking about rookie offensive linemen. You know, that's how you
want to know my top
talking.
Five quarterbacks in the 2032 NFL draft.
No, we'll get into that. We'll get into next year's draft on future podcasts, but Patriots season back on. I love it. I'm not ruling out them just winning out. I mean, the fact that they beat the Ravens proves that I think they can beat anybody. I don't think there's any game in here that's like, oh, they'll lose that one. Even like Arizona. You know, I feel like Arizona's going to come here and they're going to get shut down.
And you know what? The other thing worth noting is the team that right now is probably going to end up with that seventh spot in the playoffs is the Las Vegas Raiders. That's a team they've won head-to-head against. Yep. And that's a team that just put basically their entire starting defense on the COVID watch list.
Yeah, they keep getting COVID. They're paying fines. There's a disaster there.
So I think if they can catch Vegas, they get in the playoffs. And given what an S show it is in Vegas right now, I don't think that's totally out of the question. So you got to hope Vegas keeps imploding, but do not rule out the playoffs. It's still very much on the table.
Indeed. I think that they're going to need help. I mean, I can't believe that the Browns and Raiders keep winning, but I mean, I just have no faith that those teams are going to keep winning.
Yeah.
Browns have a stupid easy schedule, but I mean, I don't know. We'll see how those teams do. Browns haven't beaten anyone real. They've beaten only crap teams and they've gotten killed by good teams. So I think they'll falter. I think the Patriots can go on a run and we'll see what happens. I think they could get to 9 wins, maybe 10 if they keep going on a run here. So we'll see how it goes. But, that's the podcast for this week, folks. Thanks for listening. Patriots versus Texas this weekend. We'll recap that next week, and we'll talk to you later.